All right, so this series, which we're starting now, I imagine we'll go for 4 or 5 weeks at least, was born out of the idea that almost a good 80% of questions which come in, both in my own house and into the office, deal with the kitchen in one way or another. Either it's Shabbos in the kitchen, or it's milk and meat issues, Tefillas Kelim, which we're learning about tonight, the immersing of new vessels and utensils. So we just decided to do a class which will touch on all different areas, not related to specifically Shabbos, not related to specifically Basar V'Challah, just kitchen areas. So we will work it through. And if you have any ideas, concepts, questions that fit into that, please feel free, send me an email, stop me in the streets, tell me, we'll just add it right in, because some things will be entire sessions, like tonight will be the whole evening. Other times will be just 10, 15 minutes just touching on certain things. So whatever you have, throw it in and we'll hopefully add it to our kosher kitchen series. Okay, so tonight I want to do Tefillas Kelim. Tefillas Kelim, which means the general immersing of vessels. The mitzvah, it's a biblical commandment to do so. We will start with the source and work from there. So the very beginning is the source. Where does this concept come from? Everybody knows this idea. You have to immerse your vessels in a mikvah as you buy new ones. Where is that from, and what are the rules which surround that? So the source is from a pasuk at the end of Parshas Matos, the end of Sefer Bamidbar. We just began Bamidbar yesterday at Pesach Shabbos. So at the very end, the Jewish people are commanded to wage a war with Midian. Midian had caused all sorts of troubles to the Jewish people. They had enticed them with all sorts of illicit and immoral relationships. And so Hashem commands the Jewish people to avenge all that had taken place. They wage a war and they defeat them. At the end of that war, as the Jewish people gather in all of their spoils, all of the booty, and all of the things that they got from these Midianite people, these non-Jewish people whom they had just defeated in battle, there's a pasuk in the Torah in which Hashem describes how to handle all of these new vessels that they have just taken possession of. And the Torah reads, and this is the primary verse, and we'll start our evening tonight with defining what we get from here, and then we'll break that down one at a time. Pasuk says as follows, translated, only the gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead, anything placed in the fire, you must pass through fire and it will be purified. Step one of the pasuk requires anything which had been at one point passed through fire. What do you think that's a reference to? Pots being used for a cooking pot in a fire. Anything that had been used with fire must be passed through fire. However, it must be purified with sprinkling water, which is referred to in the Torah as the mei nida, the water, literally water of the nida. Sprinkling waters is a looser translation, but the literal translation would be the waters of the nida. Difficult pasuk. A couple of different concepts involved here. First of all, you have the concept, the first part of this pasuk is actually a reference to kashering the pots. Remember, who did these pots come from? Came from non-Jews. They came from people who were cooking, who knows what they were cooking in there. Now, the Jews themselves have only been keeping kosher for a certain amount of time at this point. But they got the pots from non-Jews. So the Torah says, well, first of all, the first thing you have to do is kasher it. How do you kasher it? So the general rule in kashering is, however the food went in, that's the way that the food goes out. That's derived from this verse. If it went in through fire, you got to take it out through fire. If it went in through water, you got to take it out through water, so on and so forth. So the first part of the pasuk is simply describing a kashering process. So that's fine. All the gold and silver and copper, iron, tin and lead, anything placed in fire must be purified with fire. Now it's good to go. Except the Torah then adds a second phrase. However, it must be purified with the sprinkling water. So the Gemara asks, well, what does that have to do with that? Where is that? Is that a tumah? Is that a ritual impurity? Where does this sprinkling water come in? And it's from this verse that the sages derive, this is the reference, this is the source of the concept of immersing the vessels in a mikvah after it's been kashered. There's a separate requirement to immerse pots in a mikvah. How do we know that it's a mikvah? Because the phrase that the Torah uses in the sprinkling of the water is the mei nida, the waters of the nida. So the Gemara asks, if it's just a sprinkling of water, why would it use that odd phrase, the waters of the nida? So the Gemara says, Ella, clearly, what's the Torah trying to get at? The water that you put your pot into is a body of water similar to the water that a nida would go into. That is a mikvah. And from here we derive the concept that a pot has to be, I use the word pot very generally, a utensil, a vessel has to be immersed in a body of water. Now what I want to do is, in letter four, in B, we have the four primary things which come out of this verse. We'll go through them quickly now, and then what I did is in Roman numerals 2, 3, 4, and 5, I went back over each one of those four things at length. So just as an overview, just to mention, what are the four basic requirements that we learn, and they all stem directly out of this verse. So number one, which we just did, is the obligation to immerse utensils in a mikvah. Comes straight out of the verse. The idea, I received a new pot. It's not even so new. It's an old pot. It's a used pot. But I have to immerse it in a mikvah before I can use it. Now, it is important to note this is totally separate from the kashering process, as it comes out clearly from the pasuk. First you kasher it, then you immerse it. Which means that this entire system, as confusing as this is going to be, and it is confusing because it seems so connected to Hilchos Kashrus, the laws of keeping kosher, this has nothing to do with the laws of keeping kosher. How do we know that? Because the pot's already been kashered before I even get started. I'm dealing with a kosher pot. I took a pot from a non-Jew, I passed it through fire, it's now kosher. Now the Torah says take it and immerse it in a body of water. It's a new mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to do. There's a mitzvah to put a mezuzah on your door. There's a mitzvah to take new utensils acquired from the non-Jews and immerse it in a mikvah. The Torah does not give us a reason for this. I don't have a good reason. The commentators in the halacha that come up with ideas. One is based on the Talmud in the Yerushalmi, about the Jerusalem Talmud that says that just like a person when they convert and immerses themselves in a mikvah and they elevate themselves from the status of non-Jew to the status of Jew. When a person is ritually impure, they immerse in a mikvah and it elevates themselves from a status of ritually impure to a status of ritually pure. That somehow that works its way down even to the possessions of a Jew, that we are elevating the status of the vessels from that which it once belonged to a non-Jew to that which belongs to a Jew. It doesn't fully answer the question. We'll see there are limited areas where I need to do this. We don't really have a reason. It's just, it's a chok, it's a decree. There's a mitzvah to immerse the vessels into a mikvah. Now, what I want to stress is that it's not related to kashrus. And the most prominent way that that manifests itself is that if you were to cook or put food on a dish or pot that was not immersed, what's the status of the food?
Kosher.
Because this is not a law of keeping kosher or not keeping kosher. There's a mitzvah to do and a prohibition to eat on with utensils that haven't been toveled correctly, but it does not affect the status of the food because this is not dealing with the laws of kosher where there are non-kosher flavors in the pot. It's not that. It's already been kashered. It's just a new mitzvah to do. So it's not, it doesn't have a bearing on the status of the food itself. Now, how do we know that this applies to brand new pots? Maybe this only applies to pots that you bought used at a garage sale from a non-Jew. Any guesses?
You don't update
the pot. Any students of the Talmud here? Right, so if the Gemara learns as follows, the Gemara says, since I need to tovel it after it's already been kashered, so in effect, what's the difference between a used pot bought by a non-Jew, which has already been kashered, and a new one, a new brand new pot? Even one of them have anything in the pot. The pot's clean as a whistle, so if I have to immerse a vessel that's been bought used from a non-Jew but already kashered, then it would be the same status if I bought a new one. And so if you hear the Gemara learns that whether or not you're buying new utensils or old utensils, either way, we have this mitzvah of immersing in a mikvah. Okay, that's principle number one, which comes out the verse, the concept of immersing in a mikvah. Number two, it only applies to metallic pots and utensils. How do we know that? It's pretty clear, right? There's a pretty extensive list, and the list are all metallic elements, gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, lead. When the Torah, it doesn't just say all metals, it gives you a whole list, it spells it out. So it's clear that this would only be those types of materials, and that's all that's required. So if you have Tupperware, wood, stone, all of those items do not require a immersion. You'll say, what's the difference? They also were owned by a non-Jew, now they're bought by a Jew, and the reason... I don't know, that's what the Torah says. The Torah says the only requirement is metallic pots. Yeah?
What would you write from that other metals not listed here?
Like what kind of metals?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, other sorts of metals. Like
we'll get there. Yeah. Okay. We'll get to aluminum we'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there. Now, this is just the brief introduction of the four basic principles. We'll go through each one at greater length. So again, number one was the concept of immersion. Number two is it applies to metallic pots. Now, within number two, the sages add glass on a rabbinic level. And the reason the Gemara brings for adding glass is that it shares a property with metal. And the specific property it shares is that if it gets damaged, you can reheat it and reshape it, as opposed to wood, where you can't really do that. Other things, so the sages decided that they were going to include glass, and therefore all forms of glass are also included within this requirement to Tova, which means basically you have metal and you have glass as the two principal items, elements, which are required to have an immersion room. Number three that's learned out from this process is that it has to be used in the food preparation process. The type of utensil, how do we know that when I buy a pair of scissors, I don't have to immerse that in a mikvah? Now you all know that you don't have to do that, but how do we know? The Torah says, only the gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead, anything placed in the fire, right? It's that phrase. It has to be placed into the fire, which was a reference to the fact that it was used in a cooking process. It's that kind of metal utensil that needs to be immersed. So any type of utensil that's not used in a cooking or food preparation process is out.
But if you have scissors used to cut meat or something...
Different story. Now that you're using that in the... Yes, 100%. 100% arts and crafts type of scissors. That's correct. So principle number three is that it has to be used in the food preparation process. And number four, which is derived from the nature of where this law is learned out, it has to have come from a non-Jew into the hands of a Jew. Just like the Jews took these pots from the Midianite people, so in the transfer of possession from the non-Jew into the Jewish hands, that's the only time that this would apply. So, for example, when my neighbor, the Greens, so Carrie came over with a mug that her son had made in school. It was an arts and crafts thing, and they glazed it over, and we just finished studying this in depth in the Kollel, so I was holding in there. I was like, she wants to know, do I have to tell her this? I got all excited, and I was looking at it, how did he make it, what's it made out of, what's the glaze from? And I'm sitting there back and forth, and Rifki says, wasn't that just made by a Jew? And the answer was, right. Thank you very much. Glad that you're here. It's fine. You sometimes forget. It's not just new pot. We get into the mindset because really 99% of the pots, pans, dishes, and utensils that we buy come from a non-Jew that we just are in the habit of. When you buy something new, you bring it to the mikvah. But that's not always true. If you buy it from an Israeli craftsman or a Jewish craftsman and you're buying it directly from them, if it was made by a Jew, there is no requirement to immerse your utensils. It's a specific law that's from a non-Jew's possession to a Jew's possession that requires it, not if it came from a Jew. Yeah.
And is it the fire thing? Like, if you go to one of these pottery places where you're not forming the dish, but you're finishing it?
Okay, we'll talk about it when we get the details of that one. Those are the good questions. In other words, what about a Jewish-owned store that it's manufactured by non-Jews or a non-Jewish store manufactured? It gets a little bit tricky. We'll get to that. Hopefully we'll get to all those, keep those questions in mind. This is a little introduction. These are the four principles. This is just introduction. These are the four principles which come out of the verse. Number one, the requirement to immerse. Number two, the concept that it's only really to metallic pots and utensils. Number three, it has to be part of the food preparation process. And number four, that it only applies when transferred from a non-Jew to a Jew. And so what I'd like to do now, again, in Roman numerals 2, 3, 4, and 5, we'll go over each one of those four general principles and flesh out all of the details as necessary. Okay, number 2. So materials which do and do not require a tefillah. So what basically happens, as in many things in halacha, we have that which clearly needs a tefillah. This is straight out of the Chumash. If it's metallic, the sages clearly added elements of glass. And then we're going to have those elements which are clearly outside the realm of this halacha, and then we're going to have that gray area in the middle. And the way that we handle the gray area in the middle is we say, do a tefillah, immerse it, just without a bracha. Because making a bracha is already, to use Hashem's name, that means we know for sure that this item requires it. So if we know, then you should make the bracha. If we're not really sure, it fits into that in-between category. It's like, what's the big deal? Take it to the mikvah and put it in, but just don't make a bracha when you do that. So those are the three categories of materials. If you go to the mikvah across the street by Ner Mizrach, you'll see they'll have their little charts, and it'll say that which needs without a bracha, and that which doesn't need at all. I will give you two wonderful resources. If you go online and you Google Tevilas Kalim, I love the fact that you could do this amazing. Those two words, not in English, don't do immersion of vessels. You can do Tevilas Kalim, and you'll get the OU's website and the Star K's website. And they both have exhaustive lists of specific materials and whether or not you need to or don't need to, with a bracha, without a bracha. So they are all sorts of exhaustive lists of the types of materials. They have like actual items in your kitchen. There are 5 or 6 pages long, so I didn't photocopy to give them. You just go to the website, you can pull them off. But they are excellent resources. They have little summaries as well. Over there. Okay. So the materials which require tefillah. So straightforward, metal vessels, your gold, silver, iron, copper, tin, brass, and steel. All of those pots, which are general pots, often are silverware, all of those items will need. And again, you have glass, which includes the pyrex, the corel, the crystal, any form of a glass will also be included within that and will require an immersion, and that immersion will be with a bracha. Pretty straightforward. That's the easy part. Then you get to the in-between areas, that which the halacha requires you to immerse just to do it without a bracha. So those are where you get into your glazed, non-metallic vessels. So most pottery today, if you were in earthenware, we don't use raw, rough earthenware pottery in our kitchens very, very much anymore. We just don't do that. It's glazed, and it's very nice, and it's often very expensive. China and the like. Those, because it's not metal, and it's not glass, it doesn't have either one of those categories, and you know that when it chips, you can't fix it, it's broken. It doesn't have that ability to be reshaped, you can't hammer it back into shape, it's done. So those items, they fall, they're not really metal, nor glass, but they have that outer coating. They're glazed in a glass or metal-like substance, more often closer to glass, obviously. So on those issues, so the halacha therefore says you should tovah them, and tovah them without a bracha. So if that's the only item you have to bring to the mikvah, so then do it without a bracha. I mentioned the very, very end, I think it's the very last thing on your sheet. I'll just mention it now, just in case we don't get there. The general principle, whenever we discuss something which doesn't need a bracha, what you should do is wait until you have to do something which does need a bracha. When you go to the mikvah with your new set of silverware, so I have 15 pieces here, or 25, or 150 pieces, whatever it is, you only make one bracha and do all of them at that same time while you're there. So what you should do is, you should have a little pile in your kitchen, and I certainly have one of the things waiting to go to the mikvah. Unfortunately, in my office, it's waiting to go because I don't get around to it, not because they're all, there's in-between items and we're waiting to get something which needs a bracha. But you should have, if you need it, you can go and do it without a bracha, but generally it doesn't take long before you need to buy something which would require a bracha. It could also be done at Target for $1.50. You can buy an egg smasher or whatever, something which would require it. Really, you go, you make a bracha on that, and then you could tell for the other thing as well. But if you need it and you don't have it, then you would go without a bracha, but generally it's nice to be able to wait and make a bracha. So you have your glazed non-metallic vessels, your corningware, your porcelain, your enameled pots. Now the enameled pots also, because it's coated in. You're not using it's a metal pot, but it has the opposite problem. It's the opposite situation of the earthenware, which is glazed. There, the essence of the pot is not requiring a tefillah, but it's coated with something that would need it, the glass. Here, it's the opposite. You have a metal pot, but it's coated with something which is a form of, if I understand, some form of a, not a plastic exactly, but whatever exactly it is, would not, if it was made only from that Teflon coating, would not require it. So there also, lowers its status to a tefillah, but without a bracha. Same thing with the Teflon-coated metal pans. And last on that list is the aluminum vessels. Now, aluminum is a fascinating discussion. I read there, if you go online, you'll also find the whole article on it. Very interesting. There was no such thing as aluminum in the time of the Torah. It just didn't exist. So the Torah gives an exhaustive list. It goes through six things. It says gold and silver and copper and iron and tin and lead. So the debate which arose in the halacha is, if the Torah goes out of its way to give such an exhaustive list, does it mean to do that to say these six and that's it? It could have easily just set a rule in metallic pots. It didn't do that. It gave a specific listing of six different types of metals. So do we say that it's these six and nothing else, and even if we discover other types of metals, it's out? Or do we say, no, the Torah only listed the metals which existed at that time, but certainly if we come and create other types of metals, then that would also certainly be included. So because of that debate, so the halacha is if you have an aluminum pot or pan, you would not tovel it with a bracha. It should be toveled because it is a metal, clearly a metal, but it's not the type of metal included, and therefore one would not make a bracha if you do have an aluminum vessel. So far, so good? Okay, now, which brings us to the areas where no tefillah is required. Now, I'm not spending a lot of time going through the different types of materials, because if you have specific questions, just go online. You'll have wonderful, OU Star K, both of them have wonderful resources. If you have a specific thing you can get there, I want to go over the principles involved more than the details of which specific types of of pots. Where do you not require any tefillah whatsoever? So if it's, again, an unglazed earthenware, a wood, rubber, plastic, stone, wooden salad bowls, or anything else that you have, wooden salad stirrers, things that I have a bunch of, just think of the wooden type of materials that I have in my house, all rubber and plastic, which we have a lot of these days, none of those things require any form of a tefillah as well as stoneware. Now, what about disposable aluminum pans? This is a great, interesting discussion. Now, different people have different practices with disposable aluminum pans. Some people will have the opinion of, the reason why I buy these is so I could use them once and throw them away. I don't want to think about washing them. If I wanted to wash, I would use a different kind of pan. That's totally fine. If that's your approach, you do not need to tovil, you do not need to immerse a disposable aluminum pan. If it's a one-time throwaway use, it's good to go. Take it out of the wrapping, use it, throw it away when you're done, and you're fine. If you do plan on using it even more than once, just one other time, if you're of that approach, and there are many who do have that, so then you would be required to tovil it even before the first use. It's not just that the first one is a giveaway, and then only on the second one I have to be tovil. It's if you are planning on using it, if you change your mind, that's one thing. In other words, if I'm planning on throwing it away, I don't have to tovil it. If you decide to change your mind, then you would have to tovil it before using it a second time, and that's usually the reason why no one ever uses it a second time, because if you have to go to the mikveh, it's not worth it. But if you do know that you are planning on using it more than once, then it's a regular aluminum pan. It does not have that leniency of being a one-time throwaway item, and it would require an immersion for using it.
Does that mean after you finish using it, washing it and reusing it, or does that include reheating what was already cooked in the first time?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Whew. I don't need your vote. I already know what's going on in my house. My guess is that's considered one use, but I am not positive. I'm going to have to. I didn't even think about that. That's what goes out of my house every week. Yeah, but it's not coming into contact with the food. My guess is that it's considered one, but I'm not saying that with authority. Let me look that up.
Rabbi, I've heard that the Lord
has supposed to take one down. Yes. So what Jan is referring to, and we'll get to that when we talk about the concept. Remember, the fourth of our principles is that it has to go from non-Jewish possession to Jewish possession. So one of the legal loopholes that that creates is if you, so to speak, destroy the vessel and then reshape it, you have now made it yourself. It's now a Jewish-produced vessel. So if you take a tin and you fold down the corner so that it cannot be used in that form anymore, it can no longer be used as a pan, because if you put water in it, it would just spill right out. It's no longer a pan. It's now a sheet of tinfoil. When you fold it back up, you, the Jew, have just created a new pan, and it now has the halacha that says the Jewish-created vessel does not require immersion. So that's where that idea would come from. That's correct. That idea, by the way, is used in kitchens where you have these large items, which sometimes in major industrial kitchens, which can't be tovled. We have one or two over here. They're just you can't tovel this thing. This is a huge. It's impossible. I have this pot. There's no mikveh big enough for some of these items that we have. So how do you deal with that? So the way you deal with that is you bring in a Jewish, whatever they're called, electrician or whoever, whatever the area would be, and he dissembles in a way the item that it's no longer considered usable, and then he reassembles it, and then now it's considered built or constructed by a Jew, and therefore does not require an immersion. And that is a valid and accepted legal way to avoid issues of tefillah in situations, and that is used in certain circumstances as well, where that can be used. But that's what's done sometimes in industrial kitchens, and that's what you're referring to with the And you're always wondering, like, why? How does that work? I unfold it, I put it back. But that's the principle at work, where you've now recreated it yourself. Now, by the way, that same principle, I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit, works in the opposite way when you have a kiddush cup and the stem falls off, and you give it to a non-Jew to fix. And the Jew, right now the Kiddush cup is unusable. And the non-Jew reattaches your stem to the cup of your Kiddush cup and gives it back to you. Guess what? You need to tovel that. Because he just made your vessel. Ooh. Yeah, that's a major, major discussion in the halacha, a concept of a worker who owns it. And it's based on a lot of principles in halacha of how you pay people who considers, when he's finished working it, is it that he owns it until you buy it back from him? So it's a complicated discussion, but the halacha comes out that if somebody fixes something in the same way that the Jew can fix it, absolving its need for an immersion, if a non-Jew fixes it, it will require again the need for an immersion. That's all. In that situation, yeah, I believe so. I believe so. It's a new level. I believe so. Okay, back to our glass bottles. Now, so I said no tefillah is required on disposable aluminum pans. Now here, this is where they're going to differ between glass bottles. A glass bottle like a Snapple bottle. You go to the store and you buy a Snapple bottle. And that's what I used to buy when I was in, whatever they buy here, right? You buy, pickles, mayonnaise, whatever it is, it's glass. And you finish it, and you say, well, this is a great little storage thing, I want to use it again. Well, technically speaking, what you now have is a glass vessel that's been purchased from a non-Jew, it's a 7-Eleven down the street, and you're using it as a vessel. So here's an interesting exception to the rule. Relax, this is fine, there's an exception to the rule. As opposed to the throwaway tins, where the halacha is, if you plan on using it just once, it's fine. But as soon as you plan on using it more than once, you have a metal pen and you have to do a tefillah. Glass bottles are different. And even if you plan on using it a second time, and you do use it a second time, you do not have to be tovel it. I guess, but it's not necessary. It's not necessary.
So
I think it would be preferable, but it's not necessary. I saw both Rabbi Heinemann on the Star K website and Rabbi Belsky on the OU site both said this, and I called up Rabbi Kransky and I said, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me. If you're planning on using it a second time, why shouldn't you have to? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and the way Rabbi Kransky explained this to me, if I understand it correctly, it's a difficult tshuva. It's as follows: the tin was made to be a tin. So it's disposable, so it doesn't really have the status of a valid vessel. But if you decide to make it into a vessel by using it more than once, so then a non-Jew has produced a tin, he's produced a vessel for you, utensil, and you have to tovel it. The glass bottle was produced only to hold something else. The manufacturer has no need for the glass bottle. He's selling you Snapple, mayonnaise, pickles, whatever's in there. So it doesn't have, the glass bottle wasn't really produced to be a utensil to be, it's really just a holder of something else. And when you decide to use it in a more permanent basis, you're really giving it its significance more than the manufacturer. The manufacturer planned on having you throw it out after one time. You're creating it into a more significant utensil, because they would have been happy you just throw it out once, and therefore it's almost as if you're making it, and therefore doesn't require it. It's a difficult tshuva, I think difficult enough that if you wanted to be tovel, I would not laugh at you. But then you don't have to. So if you do want to reuse, so I just make that distinction. So again, the throwaway aluminum tins, if you plan on using it more than once, then even the first time it has to be toggled. But the glass bottles are different. If you want to reuse your glass bottles, you are allowed to without toggling. Yeah.
Why would you be able to use it in the first place?
Same reason. Because for that reason, that's an excellent question. In other words, really you should think I should have to toggle even the first time, because once I bought it from him, now I have this glass bottle, I should have to tovel. I think it all stems from the same, it's not being sold, you didn't buy the glass bottle, you're really buying the Snapple mayonnaise or pickle, it has to be held in something, so it was the principle in halacha, for those of you who are here, for when we learned the laws of brachos, there's a concept of ikar and tefil, of primary and secondary foods. So if I have a primary food, my cereal, which is a mizonos, and I put milk in it, which is a shahakol, the milk is just totally nullified. I don't have to make a bracha on the milk because it doesn't have a halachic significance. It is entirely secondary and nullified to the primary food item, which is in front of me. So it's that same principle that says the glass bottle is just there to hold, so he can't sell you. How's he going to sell you the Snapple if he doesn't have a bottle to hold it? So it doesn't have that status that it's like a vessel. I bought a vessel from an anjou. It's not there. Halachically, as if it's not there, and therefore doesn't need to be toveled, even if you want to then use it, because then when you decide to make it into there, you made it there. You gave it the significance.
What if you bought a metal pot that had food already in it?
And then you have to, I saw an halacha which said you should tovel that without a bracha. So if you want to reuse a metal, if you bought a metal can of pickles or whatever they sell in metal cans, and you wanted to reuse that, then that would have the status of... So in other words, the glass is only rabbinic in the first place. So there, we have we'll be lenient on you. But if you buy a metal canister, which is biblically required to immerse, so the first time that you're using it right out of the can, it's considered tefil, it's considered secondary to whatever's in there. But if you then want to use it, there we would have you tefil without a bracha.
Like we're using a can of cookies.
Doesn't cooking, right? Remember, it doesn't matter. I didn't really go. We're going to get to that. It doesn't matter whether or not you're cooking. Let me state that because we're going to get to it soon. This has nothing to do with cooking. It has to do with food preparation. So that even if I have a cookie tray, someone gives me a dish to serve my cookies on for Shabbos, and it's metal or glass, that needs to be tovled, even though it's never going to come into contact with heat. Because this is not the laws of kosher. It doesn't matter whether or not there's a heat transfer. We're not worried about taste getting into it. Anything to do with food preparation that comes into contact with food has to be toveled, regardless of whether that's going to be used for heat or not. Describing, what are we talking about, this can of this? I only focus on the cookies inside. I don't see what you're talking
about. Like cookie cans.
Butter cans.
Yeah. So if you wanted to reuse that, yes, you would have to be toveled that, 100%. So without a bracha. All right, aluminum vessels are toveled without a bracha. So if you wanted to, when you first bought that, you wouldn't have to be toveled that the first time, because it's considered, you really bought cookies. They just needed to put the cookies in something. If you decide to then reuse that, so then you would have to toveled that without a bracha. That's correct.
What if you didn't know that until now?
Right, so it doesn't affect it. Right, theoretically speaking, if there'd be somebody who had not ever heard of that, so that's exactly what we started with. In other words, this is not the laws of kashrus. It does not affect any of the food that you have put in there. Even if you had food in there today now, so I would tell you, take the food out, bring it to the mikvah, and put it back in. The food status is not affected by this. There's a law.
It's not too late to do that.
No, it's never too late. Never too late.
This will be
saying all over the victim. Remember, if it's aluminum, don't make a bracha. There's no bracha on if it's aluminum. Okay, so far so good. So let's move on. D is a little bit complicated, but I don't want to spend too much time on it because it's not complicated. Whatever. What about when there are several components? You often have the utensil is made a little bit out of wood, a little bit out of silver, a little bit out of metal. How do I determine my classic, pepper grinder? So there's the metal blade, there's the plastic cup at the bottom. What's the status? How do I figure that out? So the first step is an easy one. If it's primarily a metal pot, but it's got wood or plastic handles, so then we say, well, that's easy. That has to be tovel, no question about it. And it has to be tovel in its entirety, including the plastic handles or the wooden handles. That all goes in because you have a metal pot in front of you. You have a primarily wood or plastic, and there's some metal in it. So then it depends exactly how the metal is being used. So number one, if the metal part comes into direct contact with the food, and that metal part is vital to the utensil's use, then it would have to be immersed, which is opposed to the metal being on the outside of as a design on a serving piece. When we learned this, it's like hard to visualize. Eventually, I was looking in my house if I had any. I didn't. Some of the guys in the kollel eventually brought some in. If you have them at home, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't worry about it. But there are. So if the metal part is critical to the functioning of the utensil and it comes into contact with food, then it would have to be immersed.
With a bracha?
Yeah, in that situation with a bracha, correct. If the metal is vital to the functioning of the utensil but doesn't come into contact with food, meaning that it's supporting the utensil, if you took away the metal, it's not just a design, it's there, the utensil needs it to function, but does not come into contact with food, it's on the outside of the utensil, but the inside is coated with, say, plastic, thermos or certain things where there's a metal on the outside, but the metal never comes into contact with the food, the whole inside is plastic. So even since the metal doesn't come directly into we'll get to crockpot. Crockpot is not, wouldn't need, right, but the metal outside wouldn't need anything. But the thermos, if it's a one-piece thermos, Now the crockpots are two separate people. We'll get to the crockpots in a second. I have a, you know, those little thermos. It's a one piece. I can't separate it, but the inside is all plastic. The outside is all metal. Without the metal, that's the substance of the vessel, is the metal, should be tovel without a bracha. Yeah.
We keep using pepper grinders here. I once had asked the question, I don't know if I asked you or saw on the internet or something, but I was told that a salt shaker did not require toiling. That was
made out of, I assume you're talking about a glass or metal one.
Yeah, well, maybe with a metal top. I mean, I just asked the question, salt shaker, and the answer was no. But it would require it.
I remember many salt shakers taking myself to the mikvah. I'm trying to think about why someone would have told you no, what I'd be missing. I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah, unless it's all wood.
If you're told that, it could be, I'm totally possible that I'm missing a reason, either missed it entirely, just not putting it together, why that would be an exception. I'm not sure why now, why that would be. I will believe you to look into that. Okay, now if the parts are separable, then only the metallic sections are needed to be immersed. So if you have a grinder, if the pepper shaker is one that you could separate and just take out the part that actually grinds it up, or if you have your juicers, or if your blender, if those things can be separate, you don't need to take your entire blender, which is generally plastic and heavy. You don't have to put that in. You just take out the pieces that are metal, if you still have an old-fashioned metal one and not the plastic ones, and you could just do those. And moving along, electrical appliances require tefillah. They must be immersed. That means your George Foremans, your urns, your sandwich makers, and your juicers. And you'll ask me, but it says on the back, do not immerse in water. That's correct, because they know the Jewish people are going to do that. Now, Rabbi Heinemann was asked that question. He said, let's just take a step back. Why do you have to immerse that? Because it's got all the requirements. It's metal, the urn, the George Foreman, the whatever these things are, the juicers, the sandwich makers, they're all a metal thing. They come into direct contact with the food, so they need to be immersed. Problem is it's got an engine, it's got a plug, it's an electrical appliance. So if someone came to Rabbi Heinemann and they said, it says on the bottom, it says that you're not allowed to immerse this in water. So he said, he quoted from the Gemara, it's a great phrase. Gemara says, Divrei HaRav, if you have the words of the Rebbe, the words of the teacher, the Divrei HaTalmud, and the words of the student, Divrei mi shomen. Who are you going to listen to? The Gemara uses that in reference to various situations where a person has someone telling him something. The Gemara always uses that as a reference. The Rav, Hashem, is telling you one thing. The Talmud, the student, the person in front of you is telling you somebody something else. Who are you going to listen to? So he used that phrase. So God's telling you to immerse it. The manufacturer is telling you not to immerse it. Who are you going to listen to? So the bottom line is, I have heard a few stories of things that have gotten ruined. I have heard of such a case. I have done many, many urns and sandwich makers and the like, and they have all been fine. Let them dry out for at least 3 days. You could put a fan if you want to make sure you get all the water out of all the areas, which is a good thing to do. But they generally come out just fine. I have done many, and you are required to do it. And if you cannot, that is, does not give you the ability to use it. You just have to find some other, sell it to somebody else. What is it? Yeah, so the metal part, you would, if you can't, I assume you usually can, you could separate those, like, to clean it, right? So any part which would come into contact with food, the bowl, or, so then you would have, yeah. Yeah, you'd have to put that in. No, but if you can't separate the motor, in other words, once you have a utensil which is classified as having to be immersed, so this is again where there's going to be a distinction between the laws of kashering and the laws of tefillas kelim. Kashering says non-kosher food has come into contact here, we have to get it out. Well, wherever it went in, we'll get it out. If I have a motor on the top, I don't have to worry about it. I could do piecemeal. I could work out different systems of kashering because of, I'm just purging the flavor which has gone in from that which has gone out. This is a mikveh. Going to mikveh, whether or not it's a man or a woman, you have to be completely submerged at the same time. So it wouldn't work if the engine's on top and you just submerge it until that point. That hasn't helped for the part which needs it on the bottom, because the entity itself has to be entirely submerged. So if we're going to determine that it needs to be immersed, then you're going to have to do the whole thing. And if it would ruin it, then that's not a product that you could buy, unless, then that's where we would go back to what we've spoken about before, from what Jan mentioned, then you'd have to get a Jewish person who knows what they're doing to disassemble it and put it back together. That would be your... that would be the way to get around. If you wanted a product like that, and you could not or were not willing to take the risk of immersing it, and I can understand why you would not want to, especially if it's an expensive product, so then you just call over somebody who knows what they're doing, and they only need to dissemble it to a point where it becomes unusable. Meaning, not in a normal manner of dissembly. When you put it away, you normally do that, that doesn't count. You need to take it apart in a way where it's not usable right now, in a way that it's not normally taken apart, and have them put it back together, and then it does not need to be total. That would be where you'd use that. Right, because if you can't separate, it's all one, it becomes, it's one vessel.
But if you those things came off.
If they do, then that's fine. If they come off, then great. Get rid of them and just
and
immerse the parts that do.
And that you get from seed, that's
yeah.
Theoretically, the person should have stumbled back.
Right.
Okay.
Right. If there were to be such a person who purchased such an urn from such a guy named Steve, such a person would have to be careful that urn. That's correct.
I'll tell him.
That's correct.
Now, that
situation, the only interesting part with that situation is some of those urns are produced by Jewish companies. So that's where it gets into. In other words, if it's a smaller company where you could be sure that it was owned by a Jew, manufactured by a Jew, and the distributors were all Jewish, and it was sold by a Jew, then it never had a problem. Something was never practical that you can say that this urn that ended up in Steve's never was owned somewhere along the distribution path by a non-Jew. It's almost impossible to say that. If that's going to be like a can opener, which we'll learn very soon in the next little piece, is not supposed to come into contact with, it's not made to come into contact with food. So the fact that it might ever do, you don't have to tovel a can opener you do not have to tovel a can opener because it's not made to come into contact with food.
But
you don't have to know all.
So what if you use something that I take? Like I saw Martha Stewart or something, and she used like records and made them into bowls and like served it, put food on it. Like if you use something that's not supposed to come in contact with food in order to serve food, you have to take
right. Only if it's
well, let's assume it's glass. Something.
Yeah, if you were to use it for food, if you would have something in glass like that, then yes.
Like mirrors.
Yes. Right. If it's plastic, then you're fine. If you use glass or metal, then yes.
Somebody gave us a glass vase, and they put craisins into it as the gift. It now had food in it, or the craisins have been in a utensil that is not made to hold food.
Right.
Do you
ever plan on putting craisins back in your vase?
No.
And that's a great example. Well, I'm going to jump at just because that's such a fascinating case. Maybe we should just wait till we get there. Yeah, we're not going to make it today anyway, so I'll hold off. Whatever. There's a halacha that says, it's going to be too confusing. We'll get it there. Remind me to talk about that case when we get down to section 4. Section 4. Okay. Section 3. Clay su'uda. It has to be utensils, mealtime, meal-like utensils. Now again, I'll stress, that does not mean cooking utensils. It means meal, food utensils. So therefore, with a bracha is required on anything used for eating, drinking, or food preparation. It does not matter, again, that there's no cooking involved. Anything to do with food has to be immersed. Now there are two criteria which must be met, which we've touched upon a little bit already. Number one, the vessel must come into direct contact with food. Sounds obvious, but that's very important because we'll come across a number of items, which I listed a bunch here just as examples, which do not need tvila. The metal shell of a crock pot doesn't come into contact with food. The shell, the piece with the pot, which goes in, of course, would. Most of the time, that's glazed ceramic, so that would need without a bracha. But the metal shell doesn't need a tefillah because it never comes into contact with food. The can opener, as I mentioned, is not made to come into contact with food. It's oh, so I asked that question to Rabbi Prinsky. I asked that question. We were thinking alike. I saw both, again, the OU and Stake bring as examples. You don't need to tovil a can opener. So I mentioned that to Rivki last night, and she said, that's odd, because she has some non-religious family, and when she went there, so her Rav said, make sure you bring your own can opener. You can't use your can opener. She said, well, I don't need to tovil it, because it doesn't come into contact with food, so then why do I have to bring my own? So I asked that question to her parents, and I said, I suggested, and he agreed with me, that the difference is when it comes to the halachas of tefillah, since it's a non-food item, it's not manufactured, it's supposed to be used for food, the fact that every once in a while it might come into contact with food doesn't require a tefillah, because it's not, you're not eating off of it. It's being used just to open the can. Anything that ends up on your can opener is not, you don't eat that. You don't push it back into the can. You clean it off under the sink and finish with it. So the fact that it might every once in a while come into contact with food, and not every can opener, it doesn't, if it's a lower down juice or beans, it doesn't necessarily come into contact with
it.
So in terms of Hilchos Kashrus, that you don't want to, especially because they're very hard to clean, can openers for that reason. So in Hilchos Kashrus, so there was, I'm not going to let you use a can opener, which has got all the schmutz from the beans and pork can that was opened before. There's no way that you could do that, nor if it's your milk and meat, if it's within your own kitchen, to cross those. You can't do that because it gets all schmutzig and it gets on the outside of the camp. But as far as the halachas of tefillah go, it's a totally different system. It's not a system of being worried about flavor or taste. It's, is this used in food preparation? The answer is no. A can opener is not used in food preparation. It does not come into direct contact with food that you're going to eat. Anything that comes into contact with the can opener gets washed down the sink. Therefore, the can opener does not require to be tovilled, even though yes, you should have a milchix and a fleishix can opener if you use them, and if you go anywhere where you're going to have a non-kosher home, you should have your own can opener. I'm going to have to run very quickly tomorrow, but I'm going to try to get done with this section. Corkscrew, hot plate, all of those things do not come into contact with food and therefore do not require a tefillah. Now the other major exception, this is a big debate exactly how we handle this, the second criteria, that when the food is finished being processed, it is ready to be eaten. So it's already at the end of the process, that when you're done with this utensil, my food is ready to be eaten. So that your cookie cutter, your meat tenderizer, your kneading hook, your metal rolling pin, your coffee bean grinder, all of those items are metal, come into direct contact with food, but not food that you're ready to eat when you're done with that utensil. The cookie cutter only comes into contact with raw dough. The meat tenderizer is raw meat. Your kneading hook, again, is your dough, your metal rolling pin, all of those things. It's not readily edible food. So there's definitely does not need a bracha. Without question, if you have any of these items, metal cookie cutters should not have a bracha made on them at all. There's a machlokas in the halacha whether or not you need to tovel it without a bracha. It's a dispute. That dispute starts in the Shulchan Aruch, between the commentators in the Shulchan Aruch, and it works its way all the way down, believe it or not, to the Starkei in the OU. The OU holds you need to tovel it without a bracha. Starkei holds tovel it, don't tovel it at all. And so I asked both Rabbi Feldman and Rabbi Prinsky, I said, so what should we do with this one? And so, you don't have to. You basically don't have to. It's a great thing if you want to wait till you're going anyway for something else. It's not. We live in a community where the mikvah, you pass it probably 30 times every day on your way to work and from work. So in a community like this where it's right there, it's right outside, you don't even have to see anybody, just stop off in the driveway and pull back out. It's a good thing to do. There are opinions who hold that if you have, again, these materials that are not with, they're still used with the raw foods, it's a good thing to do. Definitely do not make a bracha. So if you buy cookie cutters and it's metal and you say, well, it's metal and it's food, I should make a bracha on it, you should not. For sure, if you didn't even have a chance to tovel it, it's also okay. And if you theoretically would be a person who once bought a cookie cutter and didn't tovel it, the cookies are for sure okay because you have what to rely on. So if you can, it's good too, but it's not required. Alright, now the other examples of tefillah without a bracha, if it's generally used for raw ingredients, but are sometimes used for edible foods. So your mixer beaters, which you sometimes put Miracle Whip, or sometimes it's raw eggs, but sometimes it's chocolate chips and whatever. There are sometimes things used there. So that should not get a bracha. So your mixer, your metal things for your mixer, which are generally used for foods that are not ready to be eaten, they're almost always in that category. After you take something from the mixer, you almost always put it in the oven. But sometimes it's irregular. So you should tovel it. That should be tovel, but without a bracha. So if you have just that one item, should not make a bracha on that. and also storage vessels left in the kitchen. So your glass pasta, your metal flour, sugar canisters. So the halacha also says you should tovel them, but without a bracha. Right, I have to run. I apologize. We're going to get through. So we'll do the next two sections, Rinz Hashem, next week, and we'll do one more, maybe a short one. Maybe we'll do checking for bugs or something to finish up. Yeah? Okay, I have to run. I apologize. We'll meet up next week. Rinz Hashem.